This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, mock draft injection time. And this is kind of fun because now, depending on the position, we've got quotes from anonymous scouts on all of these players from Bob McGinn of Tyler Dunn's website, golongtd.com. So we'll, in this exercise, if you're new to the show or you happen to be listening this segment when normally you're not in your car listening at 7:45 during draft season each and every day, Seth and I pick a different mock draft to explore and see who they've got the Texans taking, see if we can discover any trends. Give Seth a chance to break the guy down a little bit when he's watched them on film. Seth's watched a lot of these guys. And sometimes we get the gift of a multi-round mock draft like we have today with Josh Edwards of CBSSports.com. And that's always interesting because you're like, all right, the Texans do this in the first round. Then what does day two look like? And so we can, at least from a positional standpoint, because maybe the lower down you get in the draft, the less granular the scouting reports need to be, probably, for people out there. So we do this every day is what I'm saying. So this is Josh Edwards, CBSSports.com. So we're going to announce the pick and then we'll pull up some of the commentary that the anonymous scouts have about said pick. All right. So we ready for this, Seth? I'm copying and pasting the link. So I got the anonymous scout quotes ready to go. All right, Ben, hit that sounder with the 25th pick in the Josh Edwards 3-round CBSSports.com mock draft. The Houston Texans select Kelvin Banks, offensive lineman, University of Texas.
So Kelvin Banks is like many offensive tackles in this draft that people don't know quite whether they're going to be an offensive tackle or an offensive guard or a guard in the NFL. And with Banks, it's easy to think about him as a guard because he's a guy that's better as a run blocker at this point than he is as a pass protector. And he's got strength. It shows up in the run game. Like, you'll see so many times where he just keeps driving his feet. He's got his body positioning is good and everything. He doesn't quite hold up to power as much as you'd like to see an offensive tackle hold up to power against some of the better guys like the Mikel Williams and guys like that. I'd be very happy with this pick. I know our Longhorns all love Kelvin Banks. But there's a little bit of a projection there in having him play guard. But with the 25th pick especially, I'd feel really good about this. All the things that keep him from being a top 10 pick aren't things that are impossible to achieve. It's not like he's not athletic enough or anything. Like Tyler Booker, I understand, the guard from Alabama, people are concerned about the fact that his overall athleticism doesn't seem that great.
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks, you don't have that same concern. So I would, I'm not going to say he's going to step in and start day one, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
Here's what Scout Anon, the anonymous scouts, say about Kelvin Banks. Let's see if you agree with this. He did play left tackle, but this is one scout. He did play left tackle, but he's got sort of a right tackle's features. He's not perfect, but he's got the size and strength to both block in the run game and enough size and foot agility to protect the passer. If he fails at left tackle, he'll be a right tackle. He has the most value of the tackles in this draft.
Yeah, I know there's another one. One of Lance's anonymous scouts said, I wrote him up as a guard for us. the game, Lance Zierlein's. The game he had a freshman against Will Anderson was maybe the best game of his career.
Yeah.
So that's not one of Bob McGinn's anonymous quotes, but. I guess I shouldn't have presented it like he's definitely a guard. He has that ability to maybe project either. Maybe they start him off as tackle or let him compete at guard and move him out to tackle eventually. But there's a lot of upside with him. Like, even in his, some of the things where, when I say he doesn't show strength as a pass protector necessarily, I think a lot of it's more rooted in technique and things that can be improved, and he doesn't look like a guy who's afraid to work on his technique.
Mm-hmm.
The intangibles and everything that you would worry about are all there. I think what might make some Texans fans nervous is that, much like Kenyon Green, he's a guy from Humble who is a better run blocker than he is a pass protector. There's certain things, yeah. There's some similarities in the scouting report that if you think too long and hard about it, might make you feel like, wait a second, is this another Kenyon Green? I think he's a different type of athlete than Kenyon Green.
You just triggered some Aggies, man. Or some Longhorns. Yeah. Some Longhorns, I should say.
Compared
our guy to an Aggie.
I am not comparing them. I'm saying there's some similarities that people, when the nerve is still raw there from Kenyon Green.
Oh, like narrative-wise.
If they see it when they're looking at scouting reports and everything, they might feel a little bit differently. I think Kelvin Banks has more athletic upside than Kenyon Green did.
I'm going to read two more scouts on Kelvin Banks, and we'll get to the other picks that Josh Edwards made here. One that mentions guard, and the other one is a negative review of him. And I just want to see what your thoughts are on these. Another scout said this. He does look like a guard, but let him fail at tackle first because those are harder to find.
Yeah.
Do the Texans have the time to allow Kelvin Banks to fail at tackle before determining? This feels like something you would be doing on a 3-win team. Like, okay, well, we're still in a building mode. The Texans are in a mode where they want to go win a Super Bowl now.
I think that right now you give them a chance to get on the field at guard.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you've got a young project in Blake Fisher that might end up starting this year, might not, but he's there as your swing tackle for now. I mean, Trent Brown's on the roster. He's coming, for those of you who haven't heard us talk about this, Trent Brown is 6'8", 360 pounds, coming off of a torn patellar tendon.
Yeah.
So I'm not expecting Trent Brown to be an option early in the season, but they've got options at tackle right now. I think if they drafted Kelvin Banks, they would give him a chance to get on the field at guard first.
Yep. Okay, here's a negative review. Tell me if this scout is off base, because you've been largely positive about Kelvin Banks and discussing him here. Scout said this, quote, "I don't see it in this guy at all. Big dude, average athlete, gets beat a lot, falls off blocks, not very strong, not very athletic, has issues in space, he'd have to be a guard," end quote.
Right, yeah, and that's where I think that's where you try to figure out over time. You know, with offensive linemen, you see this a lot. There's sometimes guys where it just looks like, man, just like a kid that has his growth spurt when he's 15 years old, it takes a while for him to learn how to control all that weight and all that height and everything, and that the upper body's not quite connected to the lower body when they're moving.
Yep.
That's what Kelvin Banks looks like at times. And that's where it's hard, because it's a big projection. Okay, is this something that he's going to, with technique and experience, he's going to get under control? If not, then, yeah, certainly he's got a better chance at guard than at tackle. But, again, that's also why he gets picked 25th overall instead of 10th overall.
If these glitches weren't in his scouting report, he wouldn't be around for the Texans at 25 place.
Yeah, that's where the none of these guys at 25 are the perfect prospects, because that's why they're available at 25.
Yep. All right, let's get to the other three picks here real quick. We'll just rapid fire these. They've got Josh Edwards has, with the 58th overall pick, Darius Alexander, a defensive tackle from Toledo. That would be out of character for Nick Caserio, just because it's Toledo and not a Power 4 school.
Oh, yeah.
Right? 79th overall pick. I like this one. I want the Texans to take a running back sometime in the first 2 days. This is a good one. 79th overall, Caleb Johnson, running back of Iowa. That's one of the top three or four running backs in this draft. And then with the 89th overall pick, Charles Grant, offensive lineman, William and Mary, which would be way out of character for Nick Caserio. That's not just non-Power 5. That's FCS right there with William and Mary. But Charles Grant is visiting the Texans, if not yesterday, then I think today. He is one of their 30 visits that they're doing. Charles Grant, the offensive lineman out of William & Mary. That would feel a little bit like the Julion Davenport pick, Seth, back in 2018, where I think in the fourth round, they took Davenport out of Bucknell.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it wasn't Casario.
What happened to Julion Davenport?
He might still be
Didn't
floating
he play
around the league.
A good spot? Yeah, yeah.
He was starting with Miami. He was in the Tunsil trade.
He was in the Tunsil trade, and I think he ended up starting a fair number of games.
He played for the Colts a little bit too after he left here. I'll look it up during the break. But there you go. There's our mock draft injection for today.
Running backs are fun because they are the best for the highlight reel that you watch your team drafts a running back, you always get super, super, super excited about them.
Yep.
And it's hard not to. I don't fault anybody for that. And yet, running back might be kind of like offensive line, man. You just flat out don't know until you see him do it versus the NFL. I was talking to John Harris about this yesterday with the offensive lineman. I was telling him, like, man, I get such stress trying to figure out how I feel about offensive linemen, because every single one of them has a lot of flaws. They have a lot of things they need to clean up when they get to the NFL. The best example that people have seen here locally was Mike McGlinchey, the offensive tackle for the 49ers, first rounder, came in for a combined practice versus the Texans, and J.J. Watt just destroyed him. And McGlinchey ended up being a very quality offensive tackle
in
the NFL.
Man.
Got a big contract with the Broncos,
but
they've just got so much stuff they have to clean up. And it's a lot of projection. It's just a lot of projection. And at the other positions, it's easier for the positives to show up early on. Where at offensive line, it's the negatives show up first and immediately, because you could have 60 good snaps in a game, but those flaws when they show up for five snaps end up in a 3-sack performance.
Injury Lawyer Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, I am kind of addicted to these little studies that shape opinions and narratives that come from data on social media. I'm a sucker for it. You know, I like this stuff. We get them sent to us a lot of times by people representing betting outlets and things like that. And this one pulled me in yesterday, and they know exactly who to put in the subject header based on geography. Hey, Sean, I forget who sent it to me, but the study is from BetwayInsider.com.
Yeah.
And they said, Nick Casario is the ninth most popular GM amongst his own fans, positive sentiment based on free agency so far. I said, all right, I'll bite. I'll click on this. I'll take a look. And so I've got the rankings in front of me here.
They used online mentions of each NFL general manager in their team's home location.
Yeah.
So they geolocated where these tweets or posts were coming from and assessed the sentiment in those areas of these GMs.
Since March 10th. So that's the beginning of free agency. Yeah, they call it a social listening tool.
Okay.
Whatever.
I don't like
that. Yeah, I know.
Big brother.
Yeah.
So many big brothers now.
Yeah.
There used to be one big brother we feared, the government. And now there's big brothers everywhere.
All over the place.
We call it, more likely to call them Karen these days.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Nick Casario is the ninth most popular GM, according to the geo-fenced tweets and social media posts in the city of Houston. Now, here's the interesting thing. The positive sentiment of the posts, you figure somebody who's ninth is getting, 60, 70% positive sentiment, something like that. You know, he's in the top third of GMs. 47% positive.
Yeah. Come to find out, people are actually pretty negative
about
on social
free agency.
Media. That was a shock to me.
Well, and here's the thing, Seth. We know that unless you're one of the heavy hitter, big swinging teams the first day.
Yeah.
Generally, your fan base is going to get very impatient that first day.
Yeah.
You know, we know that.
There's only five that were in the top five were the only ones that had greater than 50% approval.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so Nick Casario is ninth. I'm curious if you want to text in Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610. Are you feeling largely positive sentiment about Nick Casario's free agency? I am a little surprised he's up that high just based on the kind of other than the Tunsil trade, well, I guess the C.J. Gardner-Johnson trade, if you're including the trades, if you're just... Because it's probably hard for that listening tool to discern which is which.
Well, yeah, they're not. They're just mentions of him during this period of time.
Yes.
So, yeah, a lot of it comes down to, okay, how big were the moves and how much were people talking about him?
Yeah.
The Kenyon Green for C.J. Gardner-Johnson got a lot of pop and buzz.
Yes.
Because it felt like you were getting something for nothing.
Yes.
Given the way that we've watched Kenyon Green over these last few years. So I think that probably gave him a huge bump. But then the Laremy Tunsil trade, even though, boy, there are a lot of people that, even if they were really cool with the Tunsil trade, still were waiting for a corresponding move on the offensive line.
Yeah.
So I think contrary to what people would think outside of Houston, because people outside of Houston were saying things like, what the hell is Caserio doing?
Yeah.
Inside of Houston, I think most Texans fans were for the trade, but they expected something to happen in the ensuing days, and there were no fireworks on the offensive line in the ensuing days.
No, but I do think the totality of what you're talking about, Seth, is a net positive for Nick. Because I think when there's nothing going on, people are more inclined just to sit back as opposed to comment on it. Whereas the Tunsil trade, everybody had opinions on it. And we did the poll. We did that simple poll. Yes or no, are you in favor of the Laremy Tunsil trade after it was made? And it was like... over 80% of the people were in favor of it. So I think that trade probably helped him. Here are the top five GMs, according to this method of measurement, in terms of positive sentiment in their geographic areas. Number five, Eric DaCosta, Baltimore Ravens. I feel like he's 60% positive sentiment. I feel like at any given time, that's where Eric DaCosta is among Raven fans.
I think that's where it's like the Ravens as an organization themselves. People are kind of like, yeah, we're just doing the Ravens things, and we're going to go, oh, we got salary cap constraints. Yep, we'll deal with it.
July 14th, what's the positive sentiment? Eric DaCosta, top five. Number four, he's loving this. Ryan Poles, Chicago Bears, 70% positive sentiment, man. That fan base is just into him.
They did. They were one of the teams that did exactly what the Texans fans would have hoped that Caserio was going to do. They bolstered that offensive line in a big way in free agency. They very aggressively and trades. They very aggressively addressed a hot button topic. So Ryan Poles, who continues to get credit heaped and heaped and heaped on him despite not winning any football games.
Right.
Good for him.
Right.
Yes, he's winning the PR game.
Number three, George Payton, Denver Broncos, 75%. I haven't looked close enough to the Broncos offseason to know why he's up
that high. Well, the Geno Smith one was going to be huge.
But Geno Smith didn't go to the Broncos.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what moves the Broncos made that would have them up that high. I don't know. I'm not sure. Now, this number two on the list, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah from Minnesota, they were very similar to the Chicago Bears. They made big moves on the offensive line. They signed Will Fries. They signed Ryan Kelly. 88% positive. And I feel like that's probably Minnesota, too. Don't Minnesota people just seem like, hey there, hey, we love our Vikings. Way to go there, Adofo-Mensah.
I think the Vikings, though, because... a lot of it revolved around, okay, how are you going to help J.J. McCarthy?
Mm-hmm.
So really aggressively addressing the offensive and defensive line, the offensive line in that regard.
Yeah.
And then they got, you think with the Vikings, back in the day when they had those two stud defensive tackles, I'm blanking the guys that got caught up in the Star Caps scenario. They did the same thing. They went out and got a couple of premier defensive tackles.
Yes.
So I think just the perception of, hey, we're building this from the ground up, the fundamental upfront positions, and we're going to help out this young quarterback. Probably they felt good about that offseason.
Yeah, Jonathan Allen, and I'm trying to remember who the other D tackle they signed this offseason was.
Didn't they sign? No. The Patriots signed him. Yeah.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Yeah, you were thinking of Milton Williams. Yeah, he went to the Patriots. But anyways, 88% for the Minnesota Vikings. Number one on the list, and just kill me now. Positive sentiment. You Jacksonville people are so gullible, man. You are just, you and your owner just snowed under big words from the magnificent Gladstone. 96% positive sentiment for this guy.
I think that, I have a fresh perspective, I'd say. A deep understanding of really the modern tools and mechanisms that are revolutionizing the sport. And so, that'll certainly be something that we leverage here. While at the same time, I mean, we're... we're walking into the combine this afternoon, right? And so the current mode of operation is in rhythm. The cadence is in place. So my intent here through this initial spring is to really calibrate my own mode of operation to the current mode of operation, insert some specific efficiencies that'll help me better understand our group's insights and perspectives, and then assess at the end of this spring what types of things we can roll out into the future. But we'll certainly put the pedal to the metal on a lot of advanced sort of modes of operation.
I've just lost complete respect
for
the city of Jacksonville.
They love it,
they love it. They're spoon-fed. Yeah.
They love it. He threw out some big corporate buzzwords, and they feel like they've got a plan. This is what I always try to do. What was that one I missed?
Took it to the limit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's your audience.
That might be part of it. People in Jacksonville are like, you know, we got this reputation as these slack-jawed idiots, like we're some characters on The Simpsons or something. But now we got a real good talk. That guy talks real good.
Smooth talking guy.
What are you going to say about us now?
Yep. You got a guy that uses his words real good. All right. People were weighing in on this. Yes, Nick seems like the type of GM that really tries to construct a roster, like someone who doesn't want to absolutely tear it down because of day one free agents. I approve of Nick.
No, and I think that with the Texans too, it's again, he was the ninth highest rated in this one. It's just that nobody, only five guys had greater than 50% approval ratings.
That's the big takeaway, is people are not happy ever during free agency by and large.
The by far the worst was Terry Fontenot from the Falcons.
Yeah.
I feel like as long as they still have Kirk Cousins and a first round draft pick at quarterback in the building, and Kirk and Cousins is making as much money as he is, that's probably going to be the thing. Brian Gutekunst from the Packers was the second lowest.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers' propaganda campaign is working finally against Brian Gutekunst.
I don't know how popular he's been in Green Bay really ever since all the drama started with it. The Jordan Love, I feel like Packers fans are positive about Jordan Love, but I'm guessing feel like, okay, but if this is going to be the same old team that doesn't aggressively pursue free agency and everything else, are we just going to end up in that same Aaron Rodgers situation at some point?
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Searching. I like it. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. CBS Sports put together an interesting ranking of the top 20 quarterbacks from the last 5 years of draft class. And that's including this one, mind you. So 2021, 22, 23, 24, and then this upcoming draft class. And I'm really interested in how you would stack it, especially because I know that you guys were talking earlier this week. I believe it was you and B. Scott on Tuesday. And I was trying to join the conversation by text, of course.
Yeah.
About kind of where these quarterbacks in this draft class fall. But, of course, within the last 5 years, the Texans drafted C.J. Stroud, right? And he had an incredible rookie season. And then, you know, he had a sophomore season in which it was not necessarily as productive, even though you end up in the same place when it comes to the end of your season, right? Going to the playoffs, losing in the divisional round and such. But I was interested to see like how people would stack him up and how some of the guys in this year's draft stack up along with all of those ones. So with that being the case,
I have not looked at this.
Very good. And that is I'm going to lean on that because I'm going to ask you, John, in the last of the 20 quarterbacks of the last five drafts, top 20, where do you think C.J. Stroud falls when it comes to caliber of quarterback?
Last 5 years,
yes.
Quarterbacks drafted.
2021, 22, 23, 24, and of course this upcoming 2025 NFL draft.
C.J. Stroud, I'm trying to go through them all in my head here. I'm going to say definitely top three.
Okay. Figure what you're thinking.
I was going to go top five. I was going to say maybe three or four.
All right. So in that instance, who would you possibly think is better than CJ?
Well, I'm looking. Let's see. At the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm going back to 2021. Ooh. It's kind of slim pickings, isn't it? Just 5 years.
Yes, sir.
You know what? He might be one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he...
One or two, depending on how people feel about Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I will put CJ over Jaden Daniels right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they had Jaden Daniels over CJ.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports, CJ Stroud is the best quarterback that's been drafted over the last five seasons.
All right.
Okay. No surprise with that, right?
No. Where do they have Brock Purdy?
Good question. Brock Purdy, they have third after Jaden Daniels.
I would. That would be my top three. So, okay. So they did it right.
Okay. According to you, they did that right.
They did that right. Now, 4 and 5 gets interesting because, man, I mean, there's not a whole lot right there.
Well, I'll go ahead and rattle off the top five. Again, C.J. Stroud being the best quarterback that's drafted over the last five seasons. They put Jaden Daniels second, which I really appreciated considering that there was a lot of talk about, oh, man, well, Jaden Daniels has reset and he's now have the best rookie season of NFL quarterbacks a year after CJ Stroud kind of, you know, grabbed that honor.
Mm-hmm.
And in this place, they're still acknowledging, you know, how good he was and the reasons why he had a little bit of a downturn last year. They're pointing that at where the offense was, where the offensive line was, which, I mean, locally we talked about. So again, CJ, one, Jaden Daniels, two, three, Brock Purdy, four, Jordan Love of the Packers.
Okay.
And five, A player in the same division as you, Trevor Lawrence.
Wow. I think that's fair. Now that I look at all the quarterbacks drafted, I didn't look at the list, but I'm looking at all the quarterbacks drafted. Yeah, I guess that's fair. Probably five would be right.
I think it's fair. I guess my mind be thinking like, man, they ain't showing no love to the... I would have thought probably Trevor Lawrence was like number two or something, one or two. Because it's Trevor Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. He probably should have been if he'd come along more. Like, he still seems like he exists in that place where a lot of this is relatively hypothetical from when he was drafted. It looks like, hey, there's a lot of potential within there, and that draft status is still carrying him, but we've not seen the prospect that he was in 2021 turn into the type of player. I mean, they even gave him the contract that would seemingly befit the player in theory that they have not seen on the field, which thankfully for the Texans, because that guy's in your division, you have to see him twice a year. But we know uniquely, because we've seen him with this level of, I guess, consistency, that he has not become that kind of like terrifying quarterback that he should have been, that he should be if he is actually living up to that number one draft pick that he had.
I do have questions.
Okay.
Because I think there's going to be, this is top 20 or top 10?
Top 20.
Top 20 of the last 5 years. I would, looking at the quarterbacks, and maybe I'm just being dumb here, I think Davis Mills is pushing top 10.
No, they didn't put Davis Mills.
They didn't put Davis Mills at all?
No, they didn't put Davis Mills as the top 20. So here, I'll give you...
Because, like...
I want to see who else on this list.
Think about this. Like, I know Bryce Young's probably up there.
Bryce Young comes in at 9.
But if you're putting...
That's a little...
If you're putting Anthony Richardson ahead in the top 10, top 12...
What
has he done? What has he done?
That's a great question. You want me to read the blurb that they have here? There's been deep strike flashes, no doubt, but they've been outweighed by wayward misses on easy throws and bad decisions outside of a structure. He's higher than other clear first-round bust quarterbacks because he's played in 28 games since high school, counting college and the NFL.
Give me the whole top 10.
All right, so the entire top 10, of course, I gave you CJ, Jaden Daniels, 3 is Brock Purdy, 4 is Jordan Love, 5 is Trevor Lawrence. 6 is Bo Nix of the Broncos.
Yeah.
Great rookie year. Caleb Williams of the Bears is 7th. 8 is Drake May, which I find, I don't know, I'm you can sell me on the Drake May, but I guess you have not seen it all the way come together. We're just seeing pieces when it comes to it. Bryce Young comes in 9th.
Okay.
And then 10th, Michael Penix Jr.
This is kind of an interesting thing. Like everybody knows Davis Mills is a backup quarterback. He's been productive. He's been a productive quarterback.
You got to be honest, though. It'd be kind of wild that Houston Texans had two quarterbacks.
Oh, of course it would be. No, absolutely.
So I think that probably.
But how are you looking at this? Like the most productive? I mean, he's who? Okay, now I need to know the other top 10.
Yeah, I'm about to say
10 to 20.
Yeah, because these sound like all starters.
Because go as he's reading the list.
Well, I mean, if you end up as a backup, it's kind of hard for you to be one of the.
That's what I'm saying.
But he's been a starter.
He has. All right, so. You know? As we continue on,
now if we got Mac Jones on here, then I will be like, all right, hold on.
So I will continue reading from 11 to 20 on the top.
I'm gonna stop you every CBS time Sports. I think Davis Mills has had a better career.
And I'm kind of amazed that you have not noticed that none of the quarterbacks mm-hmm. that are in this year's draft class coming up have been put in any of this. Do you think that that's fair? First and foremost, mm-hmm. you think that's fair?
Absolutely.
All right, 11 is where Cam Ward drops in on this list. So they're putting Cam Ward as the 11th best.
So before he played a snap,
that's right. Justin Fields at 12. Okay. Shedeur Sanders comes in at 13.
Come on, man.
And then that's where we get to Mac Jones.
All this damn list up here.
They got Shedeur Sanders ahead of Mac Jones, even, man.
Well, right, Mac Jones looks like he fell very quickly into, he's a backup. I mean, Mac Jones, his one
he
year
had an okay
good.
Yeah, with McDaniels, he had an okay year.
And then it very quickly became apparent. Yep. That is not really a starter that you want. Will Levis, 15. Anthony Richardson, 16. Zach Wilson, 17.
What are we doing?
Kenny Pickett, 18.
What are we? Now, you still don't think Davis Mills should be on this list, Figgy? You still don't think that?
Now I understand.
I'm telling you, man.
I get it now when you got Kenny Pickett on there and Will Levis.
All right, so
the first team was like starting quarterbacks, though. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it'd be weird to have Davis Mills on top 10 against these starters.
I said pushing top 10. Right. He'd be pushing the top 10.
Now, Kenny Pickett and Will Levis.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a couple of places where people should probably be offended, all right?
Yeah.
19th is J.J. McCarthy.
God almighty.
They got J.J. McCarthy behind Kenny Pickett, Zach Wilson, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis. They're about to, literally, they have his replacement on the list above him, and they're like,
technically, the Titans got two quarterbacks on this list.
There you go. There you go. Somebody does up there. Like,
and then Trey Lance is 20, which I'm like,
that is ridiculous.
Almighty.
Guys, what are we doing?
All right, so we've established Davis Mills deserves to be on this list.
Yes.
How high, though? That's the question.
That's where I'm going. I would put him. Okay, who's 13, 14 on the list? Who's 13?
I mean, we got to take these Cam Wards and Shedeur Sanders off of this.
No, but that's the idea, is like trying to see how they fit in. And I thought that was an interesting exercise mm-hmm. because me and you had kind of a conversation about, a side conversation just about the idea of, I think you at one point said, one of them is going to be a stud. You're just going to, and I'm like, I don't think you can assume that one of the quarterbacks will absolutely be a stud. And I think that leads you to a conversation and a question where you go, how high of a ceiling do you have to be able to project on a quarterback for you to then make that high value proposition selection in the draft? And I think that you might be seeing that Cam Ward seems like the ceiling is high enough mm-hmm. as he's probably going to, like, I think he profiles us at the high level, a really, really solid starter, right?
Yeah.
Shedeur, I think, is an interesting one because I'm like, all right, is he going to be like a good starter as a relatively high ceiling?
Mm-hmm.
And then is that a place where you get comfortable? But that kind of player they have at 13, and then they immediately go to Mac Jones, who has failed as a starter, who is a consistent backup. That's where we get to the backup territory.
Yeah.
So Will Levis at 15, Anthony Richardson at 16, and then Zach Wilson at 17.
All right,
it's probably
so
the Zach Wilson there, right?
No lower than 15, Davis Mills.
So you got him above Will Levis and Anthony Richardson for sure.
Yes.
That's fair.
Right?
Yeah. Trey Lance? What have he done?
Well, I can tell you what he's done. I think he just signed a contract with the CFL team. That's what he's done.
Goodness gracious, man.
But I do think that they're 100% right at the very top where CJ Stroud is still in that place. Like you are blessed with a quarterback where even through, and like from a national perspective, that, you know, sometimes isn't as favorable mm-hmm. to a player locally as they can be. They saw through that season last year, even though there was a lot of conversation about, is he having a sophomore slump? People could see through and be like, no, that's still the one. And it's so nice to not be in the conversation where you're having to make the proposition or the conversation of how high is the ceiling or how low of a ceiling do you have to go to? No, mm-hmm. You're just in a place where when the time comes and it becomes available, you give him his big money contract and you continue to cook. And not only you give him the big money contract, because we're not talking about a Trevor Lawrence, where you give him the big money contract and you wonder if you're going to see the production. You know the production will be there. You know that you're set at quarterback. What a place to be if you're a Houston, Texas fan.
That's comical.
I'm just stuck on
They could have just kept it top 10.
Top 10. I wouldn't be so offended.
Neither. So Mac Jones is not on this list.
No, Mac Jones
oh,
was.
Oh, is he? Is, oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Mac Jones was in the, he was in the lower quadrant okay. yeah. of it.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Look at you playing the songs of John's youth.
Hey, you're not
Doors.
You're not kidding.
Love me some Doors.
Figgy is a sneaky Doors fan.
I am.
Yeah.
Did you see the recent news about Jim Morrison?
No.
What about
I saw this random article that said Jim Morrison is alive.
Oh, all get right. out of okay. here. I've been to his grave.
I'm going to send y'all the article.
I saw, dude,
but I saw all type of conspiracies and all that stuff. That's the first time I ever seen this one.
Why did I think you were about to tell me something like legitimate?
Yeah.
I'll show y'all the article.
He's buried at some famous cemetery in Paris.
Or is he?
Well,
all right.
I saw some dude smoking weed next to his tomb, sitting down next to his tombstone.
Was that him? Was that Jim Morrison?
No, just some dude wanted to smoke weed with Jim Morrison.
Okay.
That's a true story.
All right. Nah. I appreciate that. I imagine. I'm looking forward to the mixtape because I'm guessing that's where we're going to learn about Jim Morrison.
I should bring it up.
Yeah.
Look, that should bring it up.
That's the place for all things fun happening in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mixtape, 1:20 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 610. All right. Is this enough to change or take a prospect off of your big board? 713-572-4610. We've seen a lot of mock drafts that have had, especially now, the Texans tie to a few different offensive linemen, especially tackles, once Laremy Tunsil mm-hmm. got traded away from this team. And one of those names has been Josh Simmons. Figgy, you're familiar with Josh Simmons, right? Like,
yeah.
Tackle played at Ohio State.
O-H.
O-I-O is what they say.
I guess we have to say that.
I guess, like, I just didn't want to leave
we
you
We can't leave
there.
You hanging.
Hey, shout out to my Ohio State people out there.
Yeah, like, if you just spelled O-H and we just left it there, I feel like it was going to be a problem. But, yeah, he played at Ohio State. And there's a few things that, you know, there's one thing that I know that Seth has talked about and that, you know, has been out there, which is him dealing with the patellar tendon tear. And that's one of those things that's mm-hmm. not an easy injury to recover from. So I know that that's been like a real concern. I know that I've heard, not that I have a lot of sources, but I have heard that there's at least one, maybe two teams that are like, he's going to be fine. He might not be back for mini camp, but training camp, he'll be back for. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, not every team's medicals are 100% and like
right.
teams view, you know, read things differently and view things differently. But I know at least one team doctor's like, yo, not a problem. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, cool. I'm in on the Josh Simmons portion of this. And then we got this from Tyler Dunn of the Go Long. He does the Go Long, Substack, and he's very good, right? He does very good work, mm-hmm. long form work. And it really is cool to see somebody in the football space. Well, I mean, not only one, but one yeah. of these people out there being able to support the work outside of like the major kind of yeah. areas. Well, one of the things that in an excerpt of his latest piece about just kind of tackles, he has this excerpt here that reads as follows. He was removed from consideration by one team for makeup issues. Another team expressed serious reservations, saying, quote, kind of a F, said about a fourth scout rather said his issues are more football character. Mm-hmm. He has a complete BS sense of urgency, like a total finesse player. Mental is an issue, lacks power, struggles to anchor, fundamentals are poor, plays like a guy that was at a JUCO and just came here.
Yeah.
Close quote. Is that enough to take him smooth off the board, particularly for a Texans team that is swarming? And then also, like, for a team that let Will Wade, or I did it again. Will Wade is the coach at NC State. Well, he was the basketball coach at McNeese State
yeah.
this tournament. He just got the job at NC State. And for some reason, because he got Wade in his name, I keep confusing him with clearly, a Texans offensive line legend, Wade Smith. And that's on me. And I'll put money in the helmet behind that one because that's a bad mess up. But Wade Smith, who was on Texans All Access last week. And this is what Wade was talking about when it comes to, like, what this team is trying to build offensively, like what the mentality has to be in the offensive line.
There was things that went on in the room last year, and not necessarily what happened in the room, but what was put on film by the offensive line group, that to me, there has to be some things that get shaken up and changed in there, because there was too many things that I watched, whether it's live in person or on film or on TV, whatever it may be, where it's like, this stuff is unacceptable. And it's not reflective of what D'Amico Ryans is as a head coach. You look at that defense, And you look at D'Amico Ryans, his defense reflects him. You talk, they talk about swarm mentality. I didn't see that out of the offensive line group, and that's really disappointing to me, because that's what we were when we were there. When D'Amico was our captain of the team and he was the leader of the franchise, our offensive line was on that same wavelength of where we played the game with an edge. We played the game with that swarm mentality, quote unquote. And I didn't really see that last year. I saw a lot of stuff that was elementary stuff, where you're getting beat on TT games and you're getting beat on three-man games and pick stunts, stuff that you can see right away, and just the sense of urgency and all those type of things. I just didn't see it there.
I'm glad he Wade Smith put that.
Not Will Wade.
Wade Smith put it in that way.
That's not Wade Phillips. that's what we usually get confused with.
Yeah.
Because texting all your Wade, 713-572-4.
Because I think Seth one time tried to text Wade Smith, but he texted Wade Phillips.
Oh. Well, that's not the worst mix-up. It was like kind of
funny.
Phillips,
I think he has some fun with it, too.
I could see that. But I'm glad he put it that way, because Wade Smith, when he was here with the offensive line, Chris Myers, we know the whole group. That is what they were. And so I say that because, you know, this whole swarm mentality thing, D'Amico didn't invent that. He just put a nice, catchy, cool name to it and commands it from his defense. So, like, I totally, to answer your question, I totally think, yes, he's off the Texans board if that's the information they're getting. But it's not just the Texans. I think he's probably cratering in several boards. This isn't unique to the Texans, their approach, you know, with the offensive line and what they want out of him. So, if it's true, he'd be off my board compared to all the other options you might have there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that then takes me to a place where I start looking at who are the other guys in that general range who you might be looking at if. You know, Josh Simmons is now, who again, he's been mocked to this team a lot, but especially when you look at this team and the way that this offensive line is constructed right now, the questions that we've had about the way that they're building it, and it feels like you're going to have a lot of pressure on the, you know, whoever you draft, whether it's first round, second round, whatever, the offensive lineman that you draft to come in and be a tentpole some way. Like, you have some veterans, but your veterans are there as competition. They're there to try and, like, you know, find a way to play together, but they're not like the raw talent. Like the potential studs that you're going to have on this offensive line is, one, maybe Titus Howard if he's putting it all back together, and then two, the young talented offensive lineman that you draft to plop in there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that would be a lot to ask for a guy who had those kind of descriptions. Obviously, he doesn't fit the swarm generally, but also it'd be a lot to ask somebody who has those types of things and drop them in and then ask them, hey, with all these guys who are your senior, you now also have to be one of the better, if not the best, on this offensive line as well.
They want a certain type, and he's not their type. I mean, you know who he sounds like? He sounds like kind of a poor man's Laremy Tunsil. Really good pass blocker, incredible physical specimen, and quick and fast and strong and hands and all the things that you always hear about from John Harris and everybody else, but maybe not the makeup to be good in the room. So I would say, yes, that probably is enough to knock him down. Let's not say take him off, but knock him down on the Texans' boards. So
because that's the thing. Yeah, is if you don't
take him off.
If he falls, if he falls far, well, you might.
Yeah, like,
you
might.
Teams, there are some guys that teams go under no circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a first-round talent. If we get him in the third round, because we're not willing to do it. I guess as a secondary, I do want to ask that, like, would you get to a place where you would absolutely be, like, straight off the board? Like, he has the talent, because... Mm-hmm. In fact, allow me to play Todd McShay here. This is Todd McShay from a podcast of his. I think he did this a couple weeks ago, talking about Josh Simmons.
Are you getting a guy who's mature enough to come in and handle his business? And there's concerns about that. Just going to be up front and straight, and that's what I'm hearing. And I don't like sharing, but there's some concern with that stuff. Okay, that's number one. Number two is, he had this great stretch run early on in the season that got everyone worked up. Everyone worked up about him as a first round pick, and he's got first round talent. Who was that against?
Well, he did Mike Green, but he didn't get much reps. They played Marshall early in the year.
I get Trevor. I'm glad you brought that up. Two reps against Mike Green.
All right. Thanks, McShay, and thanks for talking over your guest. But I wanted to focus on first round talent, right? He has that kind of talent. Would you be willing to take him off the board with all those things that were said entirely, or is this like, hey, if you find him falling to the third round, you know, one of those third round picks, go ahead and select him?
I'd take him on a flyer in the third round. And I'm not one of those coaches that, you know, everybody thinks, I'll fix
him. You don't believe in the swarm, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, the third round, the risk-reward is less. You know, less risk, more reward. But the Texans might. The Texans might take him off, you know, just because, like I said, he sounds an awful lot like a poor man's Laremy Tunsil. And they just got rid of that dude, you know. So,
but it's a little better if he ain't making that Laremy Tunsil money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like a third round, all right. We might kick the tires a little bit here.
I think the big deal was Laremy Tunsil making all that money and doing this.
Yeah,
that's a part of it. But if you're building this roster moving forward, or this offensive line in particular moving forward, I think right now is going to be really huge in trying to set the tone for what you're doing going forward. And
but he's a rookie, not the veteran, and sure, that's a big difference. Yeah. like if you build the room in your image, so to speak, that you want, and you're D'Amico Ryans and Cole Popovich, it's a lot easier to whip that guy into shape than to expect to whip 10-year veteran or 11-year veteran.
You could work with a rookie. You could maybe say, hey, I can fit some.
Come here, young fella. That's not how we do things.
Yeah, rather than.
You can't do that with Laremy Tunsil.
You can't do it with an old dog.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I hear you on that, but I think that works if you have somebody who is the leader in the clubhouse, so to say.
Sure.
Who is that now? Is it Titus? Everybody's falling in behind Titus
Cam
right
Robinson?
Now? Cam Robinson, who, don't you have him on a 1-year deal?
No, right? I get it, but I mean, the room is going to be the room is going to be those guys this year for 9 months or whatever it is that they're working together. It can happen, and that's what they want. That's what the Texans want. They want that swarm offensive line that Wade Smith just talked about.
Not Wade Wilson or Will Wade,
yeah,
or anything like that. I think I'd take him off the board, honestly, like smooth off the board, because especially with what you're done for this year, obviously it's tough, but then also you're not just the Laremy Tunsil move wasn't just for this year. It's also for the next few years. You want to build this offensive line room in a way that, you know, it fits the larger mentality of what you're trying to build, and you're going to have strong staples. This is the time to add strong staples to then build around. This is the time to add a foundation to your offensive line room that you make better.
Yeah.
And everything that's described there, if true, of course, wanted to put that caveat, is going away from the mentality.
It's getting a lot of run now.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I love how so many people here on the text line and YouTube and Twitch are angry at themselves for getting it wrong.
I get the competitive nature. Damn. It's all right, friends.
Somebody texted, damn it, my first guess was Taco Bell, but I thought it was way too obvious.
I get the thinking.
Hey, Tyler,
your first, just like
Tyler was deep in that liquor at 1:15. The obvious is the answer.
I was in that deep end.
Trust your gut. That's what Clint was saying this morning after.
Oh,
Duke was 3 points off.
14 parlay. It wasn't nothing but a little $1,100 bet. It wasn't nothing but a winner.
My gut was in a bad place this morning.
Gosh dang the gut, man! You trusted yours last night at Taco Bell.
Yeah, didn't trust it this morning though.
Well, hell, it's Taco Bell. You knew what was coming.
Now, very fair.
All right, Clint, what is it? What is it that you're hearing to deal with the Texans that's got you in the "this is so silly"?
Well, it's really the whole thing, and it's old news around Tunsil. But damn it, I'm tired of it, man. Like the conversations that people have around, and the silliness that has gone on around Laremy Tunsil. I don't know what's sillier. I don't know what's sillier, to be honest with you, Ron. Is it sillier that we ask questions like who's going to fill Laremy Tunsil's shoes, and we compare guys that are on this roster or maybe draft picks to Laremy Tunsil, whether it's just in passing in conversation or it's legitimately asking the question? What's sillier? Who's going to fill Laremy Tunsil's shoes, or Laremy Tunsil's trade was a contract move? Like, which one's, it's like, wake up, folks. This isn't a, we think we can fill the shoes of Laremy Tunsil with a draft pick or a 1-year guy that was happened to be on the market a week into spring training, a week into free agency. And this wasn't a damn contract move.
What was the move then? Tell him.
Well, I told you. I told you many a time. The move, and as I'm scrolling social media, I see something, and I'm like, well, this was fitting. Somebody posted a sign here that said, nothing will kill a great employee faster than watching you tolerate a bad one. And I thought, that's probably pretty fitting for this conversation we're fixing to have. That this was a move because they needed to change the entire offensive line room. And they were willing to risk taking away the best, most talented player you can argue on the damn team. Definitely the highest paid and most accomplished. They were willing to trade that guy at a moment where pass protection for your future, for the face of your organization was at the utmost importance, and they were willing to trade this guy. And there's people out there that want to literally shape their mouths and say it was a contract move, right? I mean, get the hell out of here! Look, it was a move to completely change the face of the offensive line room. It was a move to give the OC and the O-line, new O-line coach the best ability, a clean slate to go out and correct the major problems that are on this team.
Get the hell out of here.
I mean, quit talking about who's going to replace Laremy Tunsil. Nobody's going to replace the talent that Laremy Tunsil was. It's a collective effort. Cam Robinson, he's not going to replace him. Titus Howard, he's not going to replace him. Trent Brown, he's never going to be nowhere near. They're not even in the same stratosphere.
And they say no.
Right, Mark. Yes, exactly. I need you to listen.
The hope is that the collective is better.
That is the hope. As the collective, yes, the left tackle is gonna pale in comparison physically Laremy Tunsil.
From a pass blocking perspective.
Yes, yes. From, again, a pass blocking perspective, which is the most important thing in Houston as an offensive lineman goes, which is exactly what D'Amico Ryans told you he looks at first and foremost when he looks at offensive linemen. Yes, nobody's going to feel those shoes, right? The point is you're bringing in guys that are all going to buy in. They're all going to be here in the offseason. They're all going to participate. They're all going to make each other better. They're all together going to raise the bar in the offensive line room. And on the offensive side of the football, they're going to raise the bar. And they're going to do so with absolutely zero resistance.
Are you getting the feel that people are concerned or nervous? Like, how are they going to feel this? Or they're not like, this was a mistake for them to do that? I think,
and rightfully so. I think people are nervous about the pass protection for C.J. Stroud, and I think most people look at it and you go, well, damn, you needed to get better in the pass protection department. You just traded your best guy. I don't have a problem with people that are nervous, don't understand the move, but the problem is, I mean, especially if you listen to these shows or if you're involved in the media and you cover the team, like, It's silly to walk around talking contract talk. If you cover this football team and you don't understand, or you're a fan for this football team that listens to sports shows like this, and you don't understand the what's going on in this offensive line room, then shame on you. It's blatantly obvious.
And I would say, listen, I'm not going to say it's going to work perfectly. Again, if you've listened to this show, you know where I stand on how they have decided to build this offensive line. It is not at all what I thought they would do. But I will say, the feel it has and the hope it turns out like this is, God, who is going to fill the shoes of Stephon Diggs? That's got to be the conversation in Buffalo last year. Who's going to fill those shoes? God, let me look at this group. And they lost Gabe Davis, too.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Who are they throwing the ball to? I mean, Shakur was nice as a rookie, but what are they doing it to? Okay, Keon Coleman, that's nice. They signed Mac Holland. They're the number one scoring offense in football. Some people have texted us in addition by subtraction.
Yes.
They wanted to change the room and how the Absolutely. Room was going, and I think that is what the Texans are doing. Again, also, and I don't know if it's quite this much, but the thing you hear out of Buffalo was, oh, Diggs was cool. Like maybe people didn't have as much of a problem with Diggs as maybe it showed. Like, you heard glowing things, just like I think you hear glowing things about Tunsil, but they needed to change the fabric of the room.
Yes. Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with saying it, but for whatever reason, it's not accepted, and it's not, talking contract talk with Laremy Tunsil is plumb ass silly. I mean, it was a byproduct of needing to get rid of him at this point in time was he was still valuable, had a couple years on his contract, and you could get some compensation for him, some draft compensation for him. You're lucky that that was the case. They were moving on from Laremy Tunsil any way you slice it. DeMeco Ryans didn't stroke him all year long, and then in the moment when he needs to protect his quarterback better, go, you know what, to hell with that guy that I've been telling y'all I'm lucky to have. To hell with that guy. No, this was it's just silly. I don't know. I heard it again. I mean, for me, it's just like, come on, man. What are we doing here?
Your thought? It's just very clear that the direction they wanted to go.
Right. Yeah. Yes. This was not a we need contract for CJ or Will's contract or Stingley's contract. Well, it had nothing to do with that. And this wasn't a, boy, where we really think we can draft a guy and get talent. I hear people talking about like draft picks and going, oh, if you draft a guy at left tackle, so-and-so was really good and compare him to, no, don't compare him to Tunsil. Don't compare Cam Robinson to Tunsil. It's silly. It's not, you're not going to get there. It's a no-win situation. A rookie or Cam Robinson, they're going to pale in comparison to Laremy Tunsil. Maybe. Understand it's a five-man game, and those five guys are going to be better with Laremy Tunsil not being here than the five were when he was
here. That's what their plan is.
That's it.
What their hope is. Astros continue to lead 3-0. Brian Abreu is in for the eighth inning. He's got two outs, just walked Juan Soto with two outs and has Pete Alonso to deal with. We'll keep you updated on that. But we got an early answer. As we said, wanted to see what happens in a tight game to see what it is that the Astros would do decision-wise if they would do anything defensively, and they did. They made a move in the outfield, and that was Chaz McCormick is entering the game for Cam Smith. So, 8th inning, 3-0 game, 3-run game. Chaz McCormick enters the game, and Cam Smith goes to the bench, and Jose Altuve remains in left field. So I don't know if this is going to be a sign of what they're going to do in these scenarios, in these situations, but at least the first time they elected to replace Cam Smith and not Jose Altuve.
Well, I mean, replacing Cam Smith at this point, I mean, unless he just is on absolute fire at the plate, is a no-brainer, right? I mean, you got a guy that's playing right field for the first time, and you've got the ability to put what you expect to be, if Chaz was the starter, to be a comparable bat, and significantly more experience and better glove in the outfield. So that's an absolute no-brainer. The predicament that Joe Espada is in is what do you do with Altuve in the eighth and ninth inning with a one-run game, or even in this instance, a three-run game, or in extras with him in left field. That's the predicament that I think we're going to see as Astros fans become bigger and bigger as the season goes along. Now, how does Altuve handle it? How does the organization handle it? We'll see.
Yeah, because you have to trust Altuve's bat more. Like just well, in sure, case it comes back around. And that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean but you made the point earlier, just I mean, it's almost laughable, but I mean the best way to handle that would be Dubon in the outfield and Altuve back to second base. I mean that's the best way to handle that. You can't pull that bat out of a game in a tight ball game late that could go into extra innings. That'll bite you in the ass. So anyway, that's the predicament they're in. We'll see.
All right, we'll keep you updated. The tying run has now come to the plate off of back-to-back walks from Brian Abreu as he was able to get the first two outs of the inning. Back-to-back walks as the tying run comes to the plate with two outs.
Abreu, you got him some new ink, it looks like. Back left of that neck.
Does it? I did see that.
The back left of that neck. I don't think that was there last year. Got him some new ink.
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
I think the Astros, even the Texans, maybe the Rockets before they start. I think in the offseason, I think they should do offseason ink reveals. I mean, you're looking for content. You're looking for ways
to offseason ink reveals.
Offseason ink. I mean, I'd like to see what all Abreu has done. He's got a lot of ink there. I'd like to see what all he's got going on.
Yeah, he's
the three crosses is a real popular tattoo.
Is that what he's got?
I think it's three crosses in a shadow or in some kind of cloud or something on the back of his neck.
Pretty,
I think
it's
a cross at least, but the three crosses is no, it's just one cross. It's just one cross.
That's
up behind the ear.
Right, that comes up from the shoulder blade all the way on up.
I'm waiting for him to
he got aggressive with that thing.
I mean, hell, just bring that thing around your forehead, man. I mean, Mike Tyson is that.
Tyson it. You ain't got to bring it around the forehead. Let's not get that aggressive. But
right. That's one cross, not three. But you know what I'm talking about. The three just.
Yeah. All right.
Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Three in one.
Yeah. All three of them right there on. What was that? Abreu? The other Abreu had on his neck, didn't he?
Did he have that on his neck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where is Jose, by the way? Florida
Gulf Coast League.
His home league.
Starting his coaching career.
I think he still thinks he's going to give it one more go.
Somewhere collecting, what, $30 million?
He's going to get one more. He going to get one more go to that thing. All right.
Good God.
The Astros, we continue to keep you updated on the Astros. All right. As I said, and I saw some people texting in, what's your thought of what you want the Texans to go after? Right? They've done a lot of movement with the offensive line. They've added some receivers in Watson and Kirk. They've had a lot of tackles. They've even added in the secondary at safety with Gardner Johnson. Where is it that you want them now to go here? As we look here and I see someone text in, I think Caserio has to flip gears from last year's trade, trade back and trade up for Banks or Campbell, get a true tackle and slide Howard to guard permanently. Makes a lot of sense. Sleeper option would be to trade up for tight end Warren if he falls past 14, and then try to get top tackles. Get one of the top three tackles. But where is that space? I've told you, Warren would be somebody that I would get aggressive to get if he falls in a certain.
I think they're going to get real aggressive. I mean, he's top 10. I don't. I like him a lot. And at the time, I thought he would fall a bit. I thought he would be teens, and the Texans would be able to just move a few spots up and get him. I don't want him to get overly aggressive to go get that. I mean, here's the thing. The perfect world for me is I need proven, we've got film, we know this guy can play at the interior offensive line position, either guard or center. We need that. We flat out need that. I would rather them not take the risk of drafting an interior offensive lineman and that be the answer. We've seen how that's worked out with the Texans on multiple fronts, first round pick and second round pick, Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs. It's not the answer. It takes time typically, right? I would rather them go get Brandon Scherff, Dalton Reisner, Will Hernandez, David Andrews. There are some proven players out there that will be no doubt about it, good enough. And upgrades based on what they have. So when you ask about the draft, I think it needs to be speed, and more speed. It wouldn't bother me one bit if the Texans didn't use their first-round pick and their second-round pick and even get aggressive with one or both to get more speed.
Offensively.
Offensively, yeah. Absolutely, man. The number two wide receiver, if you want to say that, another outside wide receiver, however you want to couch it, a guy that can not only take the top off of it but can also run the route tree, a guy that maybe have a little bit of shake, and be a difficult tackle. A guy, if you trade up and you get aggressive, maybe a guy that has all of that would be nice. And to me, another running back. Another running back that is, again, Jaden Blue from Texas. I don't know how far his 4.23, 4.28 yesterday is going to carry him. But to me, there's a real need for speed on this offense, Ron. Ever since you said that a week ago, I just absolutely cannot get it out of my mind.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be speed, and more speed. And if you venture away from the running back wide receiver position, I wouldn't mind it being if there's a true interior defensive line that's just an absolute dog that's on the board when your time comes around, or you can get a little aggressive and go get him. It wouldn't bother me if there wasn't one of them interior defensive linemen out there that's just that has game-changing type potential. If they didn't get one of those guys, but I'd say offensive skill, speed, and interior defensive line. That's where I'm at.
That is absolutely where I would want to go. Because they find very similar to what teams have done. Find their speed receiver. Chiefs moved up to get Xavier Worthy in the draft last year and picked up an element like that. I see somebody just texting, I need Golden at 25. That would be one to entertain. I would love that pick. And that's where I would go. I just fear right now, Clint, that they have potentially backed themselves into a corner where they are forced.
Damn, I hope not.
To have to get a guard. Like, I hear you. Like, we have watched them. They have clearly gotten aggressive and gone after tackles.
Yeah.
Like, a bunch of them. Trent Brown, they brought in. They brought in Cam Robinson.
Like, sure, they, seems like they're going to go guard and draft, right?
Right. They've been aggressive. Yeah. And to the tackles or the guards you've named out there, like, those guys could be had, and those guys probably aren't yep. hugely expensive, and they've not pulled the trigger. And I feel like they've backed themselves into, we need to get a guard in the draft. We've got to get it aggressive early at that 25 to get a guard, and then you would know that person would be dropped in as a starter. So I wish that wasn't the case, because I do think, like, Golden, one of those speed receivers would make a lot of sense. But I get the feel, Clint. They put themselves in a position where they got to go interior.
You make a lot of sense. The crazy thing.
And it feels like that's what they wanted to do.
The crazy thing, Ron, is you know, it's hard to find a guy that's plug and play unless you're really good around him. And you're talking about communicators at center, whoever you land on, that were suspect throughout the year last year. I guess Jarrett Patterson was better, but you had communication issues all year long. Man, to think that you're going to plug and play, and the same guys that looked at Kenyon Green and said, yep, this is the guard we want, are the ones that are now going to select the interior offensive line that is ready to play. Clint, like, if they hit, even if they hit this year, you want to ask them, like, what? How the hell did you miss on Kenyon?
Yeah, that bad. Especially when a guy went a couple of picks behind him with the Chargers, and has been a really good player, Zion.
I just wonder, you sat down with Kenyon Green, like, what about Kenyon Green? Because film, a guy can play or not play, you get it, whatever, okay, at the college level. It's the college level football is extremely different in the trenches from the people always ask me, Clint, like, what's the biggest difference when you jump from the SEC to pro football? And it's without a doubt the offensive line and defensive line play, right? Is like, so film can be very misleading when you're evaluating an offensive lineman, especially an interior offensive lineman that's really living and dying with just brute strength and manhandling guys, right? In tight spaces. Something had to tell Nick Caserio, like,
this is
without a doubt a starter. Like, how do you miss that bad?
They probably looked at this and said, what the hell?
How do you miss that bad? Yeah, I mean, there was nothing.
They tried everything.
They tried it, but there was nothing ever, Ron, like, in press conferences that just screamed, like, yeah, this dude's it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was never, like, body-wise, there was never, like, personality-wise, there wasn't, like from there was nothing about he was when I looked at him from jump, it was always going to be a physical and mental developmental player, and you drafted him 15th overall in the first round. Now that same group is going to, now I'm supposed to sit here and go, yeah, I want them to draft a guard and plug and play on this offensive line that's tasked with protecting CJ Stroud. That scares the hell out of me.
No, it's fair. That's why I wish they'd have taken care of it a lot with more proof.
Damn, I hope you're wrong.
All right, coming up as we continue, Tyler is out, but he's still out here trying to make you a little cash. He still has T-Mill's best bets, and we will hook you up with those, see if we can win you a little money tonight. And to keep you updated here on the Astros, as the Astros are in the eighth inning, leading 3-0, got out of a bases-loaded jam. As Abreu walked the bases loaded but got out of it, we'll keep you updated on that. All of that as we continue right here live on the